And welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Jeff Fiegels. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We're going to continue to preview more of the classes for the upcoming NFL draft. Today we're going to focus on South Alabama, which has Gerald Everett, one of the top tight ends. And then we'll get into Pittsburgh, which has a few other prospects. So a lot to delve into over the next hour. We'll also get to your phone calls. And Jeff, they've put up a few new mock drafts.
A few?
Seems like
a few.
Every single day. That's a few, maybe the appropriate term. Or the
do you do a mock draft?
Maybe peruse here or there.
A little bit, maybe the first round or two?
Nothing beyond the first round, though, because it's very hard to obviously predict who's going to be available beyond the first round. But a lot of the so-called experts have released a variety of different mock drafts. And it's interesting because, you know, everybody likes to project who the Giants are going to take at 23. And it's hard to say since we don't know necessarily who's going to be available. But the predictions go across the board.
Offensive linemen, quarterbacks, linebackers.
Running back, too. There's no real consensus, at least in terms of a position, that people think the Giants are going to target here.
Yeah, and like I said last week when we were talking about this a little bit, you know, you're kind of in that five-pick window. So as you get closer to your pick, you're kind of seeing the landscape of the draft, how it's going, who's trading up, who's trading down, who the players are, who the movers and shakers are. And, you know, it just all depends on which players you have on your board and which philosophy that you are going after, whether it's draft for need, draft for the best available, draft for the future, quarterback maybe, something like that. But bottom line is nobody knows other than those guys that are going to be in the war room. I said it here last week. I think it'd be really cool to be a fly in the wall.
Oh, yeah.
Sit in the corner. I wouldn't move. I would just stay there. I wouldn't say a word. I wouldn't even bring my phone. If they let me in there, I would just sit there and watch it all and see how it happens and really kind of understand. I don't think a lot of people understand how the phones are working. I mean, they are working that room. They're working it. And so,
especially when you're at 23.
Exactly.
And so much is going to happen before you go.
Yeah, I mean, if you're up there in the top five, you kind of understand. You've gotten phone calls from people who are saying, hey, are you interested? Are you not interested? What do you want to do? So you kind of have a little bit of idea. But like I said, I think when you start getting within the 3 to 5 picks of your pick, that's when things start. You got to start understanding, okay, where are we going in our philosophy, and are we going to get the guy that we want? And I think that inevitably it always happens that once, especially like linemen, when you see linemen start getting taken off the board, it usually goes in succession. There'll be another lineman the next pick, another lineman the next pick. And, of course, I've read a lot about the linemen in this year's draft. Some people even coming out and saying that it's just atrocious, you know, just a horrible draft for linemen. So, you know, that with that philosophy, you're wondering, are the Giants actually going to take a chance on one of these linemen? You got a couple guys that are first round pick worthy. One of them is injured. The other two guys, you know, they're not grading out like the draft last year. Last year, remember, it was really heavy on the offensive linemen, but not this year.
Well, linemen may not have depth, tight end does, and we're going to hear from one specific tight end in terms of his outlook in the upcoming NFL draft here momentarily. For those of you watching on Twitter, we invite you over to Giants.com to watch the remainder of the program. Lance Meadow, Jeff Fiegels with you here on Giants.com. Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live as we are continuing to preview the upcoming 2017 NFL draft. We're going to focus today on South Alabama as well as Pittsburgh, and we are now joined by the radio play-by-play announcer for South Alabama, and that is J.D. Bob. JD, Lance, and Jeff here on Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Hey, it's great down on the Gulf Coast. Great weather here, and we're as excited as you are, obviously, about to take some players, and it's always a proud moment when we can send a couple guys up.
Absolutely, and the guy that tops the list this year is clearly the tight end, Gerald Everett, and it's a position where there's a great deal of depth in this year's group of prospects at that position. JD, what is it about Gerald Everett that stands out to you? He played 2 years at South Alabama after transferring from community college and the University of Alabama, Birmingham, but what is it about his skill set that jumps out to you?
You know, I think at any level in the secondary, his spatial awareness, route running is always crisp. He's very fundamentally sound. He's got great hands. Obviously, he wouldn't be looked at if he didn't. But, he has a great feel for secondaries before the ball's ever snapped. If he's going to drag, if he's going to run a corner route, he kind of knows where that soft spot's going to be. He won't continue running a route into coverage if they're playing zone. He, if he's man, he knows how to break away. And I think he just has a really good sense for the game when facing multiple looks from secondaries, which he'll face a lot of at the next level. And for us anyway, especially a year ago, not the past year, but the year previous, he was also a very multi-talented guy that could run the football. We could line him up in the backfield. We could put him in motion, and he even threw a touchdown. So running the ball, he was great on two-point plays, as a slot receiver, gave us just a tremendous weapon.
Well, you look at the tight end position, and across the board in the National Football League, this position is now – these guys line up everywhere. They line up in the backfield. They line up at X, Y, Z, you name it. And when you get a guy with athletic skills, as in Gerald Everett, and it seems to me that, he's a big guy. We have him here on paper at 6'4". He's probably a little heavier than what they have him, at least what I saw, at 225. He might be a little bit more towards the 240. But, this young man is going to get drafted. A lot of guys, people that I've read, doing a little research on him, have him maybe sneaking into the first round, maybe late first round or even in the second round. So, from a young program's perspective, this is quite an honor to have a guy like this to be drafted and to represent South Alabama. Guys down there got to be pretty excited about this whole thing. So I think he'll be a nice fit in the National Football League, and especially how athletic he is. You look at the depth of these tight ends, they're all athletic. They're all very good prospects, and certainly this young man has got a future.
Yeah, I think he'll be our third tight end in just our young history. We weren't playing Division I football 6 years ago. So it's a new thing, but now our third tight end getting to the league. Wes Saxton got to the Jets. Braden Bowman, who was actually a backup tight end, had a great combine. I believe he's now at the Jets after a stop with the Redskins. So this would obviously be our legitimate pick, and obviously the highest in Gerald Everett. Eight touchdown grabs 2 years ago, four last year. And you were talking about how, the athleticism needed. I think you saw more this year of him. A hand down and a three-point stance. When he is tucked in next to the line, sometimes offset as a wing, maybe 20% of the time up as a true tight end next to the tackle, because you look at an O.J. Howard, who may be the number one tight end coming out of Alabama, the great talent from the tight end from Ole Miss, that is something needed at your level. It's a guy that will line up next to the tackle, will put the hand down, three-point stance, can release and block a giant middle linebacker, take on somebody like a tackle or whatever on a double team. And Gerald Everett seems to have all of those skills plus the speed that he displayed at the combine.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the blocking aspect, JD, because obviously that's a big part of evaluating the tight end, especially at the NFL level. Everybody can pretty much run routes and catch footballs. It's who stands out in terms of their physicalness at the line of scrimmage. And you mentioned that he does line up next to the tackle, but, how much have you seen him improve? He's been there for two seasons. How much have you seen his willingness to block grow over these last 2 years?
I think he's had that ever since he got here. He was looking for a home when UAB canceled football. He came in here with just an unbelievable high football IQ, a great teammate. He's got that personality, all the characteristics. He has the intangibles, of being a great teammate, also a great leader. Not one of those in-your-face, yeah, yeah, yeah. He will come over. He will encourage. But he's had that blocking skill for the last 2 years. He was remarkable as a junior. I mean, he was showing senior ability and was getting national attention 2 years ago. As a blocker, everybody would love to have a tight end who's 6'7" and, 260-plus, who's going to block and be punishing there. But then again, you got to be able to release him, put him out in a slot or a three-receiver set and get down. So it's kind of a touchy, how do we get the best blend? And I have seen him over the course of 13 games this year block very well.
Well, one thing that the Giants have been missing with the tight end position here has been blocking. And really, like Lance said, most of these guys can go out and run a route and catch. It's the intangibles that they bring to the table and the blocking, the acumen that they have, the football. They need those skills. It sounds like Gerald is one of those guys. And, hey, listen, the Giants, they're kind of talking about maybe drafting a tight end. So maybe he becomes a Giant one day. Who knows? We'll see.
That's great. I was actually I came here 4 years ago. Previously, I was at North Alabama, and had the privilege there of being there for the radio calls, the final year of Janoris Jenkins, because he transferred, played his final year with us in Division II. So, got a Got a common guy up there, Janoris. What a year he's having.
Oh, man, he had an outstanding year. And we were all excited about getting Jackrabbit up here, and he certainly did not disappoint. Had another great year, and we're looking forward to having him back.
And another example, JD, of a player that you can't necessarily just go by what schools they've played for at college, but whether or not their skill set translates to the National Football League, which is some of the things that you alluded to as we're talking to JD Byers, the radio play-by-play announcer of South Alabama. JD, you mentioned that Gerald was moved around in terms of where they lined him up from an offensive standpoint. How much did he see safeties versus linebackers in terms of what the defense would present towards him? And how do you think he fared when he went up against different personnel at South Alabama?
You know, it depended a lot if we were seeing guys, at corners that were lockdowns, if they were matching up in zone. What kind of defensive set we were looking at, because a lot of times, especially this year, you saw his touchdown catches go down, his total catches go up, his average per catch, I think, stayed about the same. But it was sometimes to everybody came in knowing he was our number one weapon, and we were using him a lot. So sometimes it was baiting him to one side to open up maybe slot receivers on the backside, or we put him in a wing, put him in motion to try to get a linebacker to follow him so we could run toss sweep the other way, play action the other way. And sometimes we were using him just to get guys to flow towards him instead of throwing at him. Where he was and how he matched up at either level, linebacker versus safety, linebacker versus corner, it was his breakaway and knowing where to settle down, where to, kind of maybe sprint away, because we did use him a lot underneath. We used him dragging. We used him play action right. He drags back to the left, find him kind of over there soft. And he had those great hands for over-the-shoulder grabs, and that's where he was most effective, was kind of at that second level. And then the yards after catch, and I don't have that stat in front of me this year, but if anybody had game film or wanted to watch what Gerald Everett did after the catch, was just remarkable, and I think maybe was the most impressive once the ball was in his hand.
Well, certainly that is what really jumps out to anybody that watches him on film, and that's what I was going to bring up in terms of his ability once he makes the catch to then really bring it up a gauge and get separation from defenders. Earlier, JD, Jeff had alluded to that he's been seeing some mock drafts in terms of maybe low first round, early second round. I'm curious, what have you been hearing in terms of where you think Gerald Everett will go in the upcoming NFL draft?
And I've got to be honest with you, radio guy here, football, I go into basketball, and then I go into baseball.
Completely understandable.
A traveling guy, and I don't get to be around football as much in the spring as I'd like. I don't get to be around our coaching staff as much as I'd like, or the weight room, because that's where a lot of the chatter is, because obviously he still trains, he's still in good contact with those guys. Here regionally, I think the most of the talk in the southeast part of the United States is he comes up in conversations, but he comes up in a group, and he comes up because it looks like three, if not the top three, three of the best are right here, within a three-hour drive of each other, and that'd be O.J. Howard at Alabama. And the name's eluding me, the tight end at Ole Miss.
Evan Ingram, you're talking about. Yeah.
And then, of course, and they kind of get grouped depending on what a team needs. Are they looking for, a guy who's going to, block most of the time, because you don't have the luxury of having three or four on your roster when you get to that smaller roster in the NFL. But it seems regionally that he's mentioned in those group of three as the guys the NFL will be looking for, depending in what order people pick or trade down or trade off picks and need a tight end or not.
Well, JD, we greatly appreciate the time and the insight. I know you're busy with the baseball season, so we'll let you go. But thanks so much for hopping on the program.
Thank you. Always a joy, and can't wait to see where Gerald goes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you, JD.
JD Byers, the play-by-play announcer on the radio side for South Alabama, weighing in on Gerald Everett, who is by far their top prospect. And, as he mentioned, Jeff, there is a great deal of depth at this position. It goes even beyond Everett, but this is why teams are going to have to determine, if there's so much depth at the tight end, do we need to go after the guy initially in round one, or do we wait because maybe in the mid to late rounds we could still get a quality prospect?
Yeah, and I think that on paper, with his numbers and things he's doing, I think that's something they'll have to, to me, there's usually these guys have somewhat of you kind of say, okay, he was a junior college guy, and then he came out of there, and so is there something else there that we don't know about, as far as his IQ, on football. I don't know. That's the research part of this whole draft is getting together with these guys, interviewing them, and kind of sitting down with them and kind of understand what type of player they could be, what type of character issues they may have or may not have. Are they good guys in the locker room? It sounds like JD said he's a good leader, good head on his shoulders, which will go a long ways in the National Football League if you have the other intangibles. A lot of times the guys have great character and, you know, they're smart and everything, but they don't have the athleticism. Put the both together, that can bode well for somebody coming into the draft. And really, when you look at the tight ends this year, you're right, Lance. You know, do you take and say, you know what, because of the depth, we'll just wait a little bit to get this guy in a later round. So he's definitely going to get drafted.
No doubt about that. And because of his size, I mean, there's a number of people I've seen refer to him as sort of an elongated wide receiver because of his body build.
Sure.
But the fact that JD mentioned that he's got the willingness to block and they utilized him as a blocker is important because that's what separates O.J. Howard from Alabama from the rest of the pack, because you know you're going to get a legitimate blocker. The question is, where do these other guys line up in terms of the blocking?
Yeah, he might be the best blocking tight end on the board, where these other guys are just more, you know, receivers, if you will. But, you know, the Giants, they demand that their tight ends block. They need to block, and they need to block well. And that is a position that needs to be better going into the 2017 season, the tight end and the blocking.
Well, and it's the best way to get on the field, because then you're not a liability, and the coaching staff trusts you. And they brought in Red Ellison, Jeff, and we know his MO is blocking and maybe lining up as a fullback. But the question is, are there other tight ends on this roster that they feel good about putting in and being a consistent blocker? And I think there's room for the current guys to grow, but also somebody to be brought in externally and actually still flourish in this system.
Well, I think with Rhett, he's going to be your typical guy that's going to be in the blocking situations. But, you know, if you can get another guy that can do, you know, maybe not as good a job as Rhett, but maybe a little bit better than the two guys that are here, maybe one of those other tight ends that are on the roster may not be here because of it. Who knows? But, you know, listen, I think there's a lot of upside to the young guy, the tight end drafted last year.
Jarrell Adams.
I think there's a lot of upside to him. In fact, he kind of reminds me a little bit of Gerald Everett in his size, 6'4", 225, 230 pounds. You know, I actually think he might even be a little bigger than 6'4". But his blocking needs to has a little work to do. So.
Yeah, in terms of Everett, maybe a little bit more polished because of his offensive skill set. And, you know, you brought up about him being in junior college. It's an interesting path because Everett only played 1 year of high school football because he was a basketball player. And how many times have we seen former basketball players? Antonio Gates was a basketball player.
Jimmy Graham
was a basketball player. This is not unusual for basketball players to then transform themselves into tight ends. And Everett seems to be the latest guy because, as I mentioned, he was at, Hutchinson Community College for 2 years. Then he transfers to the University of Alabama, Birmingham. They get rid of their football program after 1 year, so he's looking for a program to continue to play football, and then he finds South Alabama. So he's taken a very interesting route to get to the NFL draft, but I think it's the athleticism that is by far the most appealing aspect because he's built like a basketball player.
It just goes to show you how these scouts and personnel departments, they'll find you. They'll find you. If you're in a small program somewhere, they'll find you. And, you know, he got invited to the combine. He had some good numbers there, which obviously helps his draft status. And we'll see what happens.
Well, and Larry Donnell, just bringing it back to the Giants, I mean, Donnell also had an interesting background in terms of.
He was a basketball player,
too. Didn't have a lot of football experience. He was actually a quarterback, if you recall. And then they saw something that maybe he could transition to tight end. So, I mean, it's happened before. It's just a matter of can the skill set. And I think you could say about this with any position, Jeff. Can the skill set translate to the NFL? I mean, you could dominate at the college level.
Yeah, no question.
But then can you then do that? Can you apply yourself at the NFL level?
And when you talk about how, you know, you asked them the question about getting up on safeties and linebackers and things like that. At this level, you got to be able to separate yourself from those guys because they're good. And if he can get up and is good in open space and – is a good seam route runner that the Giants need somebody to run into that to that middle of the field. And I keep saying the Giants because I for some sneaky feeling, I think the Giants are going to draft a tight end, whether it's in Njoku or somebody. I think they're going to get to go after and get a tight end. So that's just me.
Considering how much depth is out there, I would not be surprised. And I don't even think it necessarily has to be in the first round.
No.
I mean, I think it could be in the mid rounds as well. They could still get a quality tight end.
Yeah, because Rhett, you know, he is not a tight end. He's not here to catch balls.
in his Vikings career, he barely caught much of anything.
No, I mean, nothing. Yeah. So, I mean, he's really, if you want to think of him more of a, as a fullback rather than a tight end, but then you look at the two other guys that are on the roster, they both got, you know, obviously Will has the most playing time and the most success, but, you know, the other, there's not a lot of experience there. So we'll see what happens.
201-939-4513. That is the telephone number, hashtag Giants chat. We're going to try to squeeze in a few calls here, and then a little bit later on, we're going to cover the Pittsburgh prospect. So that is
a little more
up
Pittsburgh
here. Yes.
Than in South Alabama.
A little bit
Alabama.
More. It goes a little bit more beyond than maybe a tight end here or there. We've got Sean on the line in California. Sean, what's happening?
Hey, Sean.
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey,
Singles,
I was just watching you last night. I was watching the rerun of Super Bowl 42.
Ah.
They have all the games on YouTube. It's so great.
It felt
hopefully
that
we can get to another one. real fast, I don't want to just throw this off the ball for it, but Seahawks call at number 23. They want to trade away Richard Sherman. Will we have enough money to have him on the roster? All right, you guys have a good day.
All right, Sean. Appreciate the phone call.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but I just, you know. Listen, you have to call Kevin Abrams on that one to see if the money is there. It's a lot, and are the Giants willing to do that? I to be honest with you, I don't think so. I think they're pretty set in their ways with what they went out and got Jenkins last year. Younger, definitely. Maybe moving into that Richard Sherman stratosphere after the year he had. But, you got DRC, who is not a young guy either, but you're going to bring in a Richard Sherman, who certainly is not a young pup either. So I just don't know about that.
Well, and if you bring in Richard Sherman, just to play the hypothetical here.
Who do you play him at? I mean,
where do you play him at? Yeah. And then, if anything, his playing time will come at the expense of a young guy like Eli Apple, mm-hmm. who you want to develop because he's on a more manageable rookie contract.
And he's a first-round draft pick.
Exactly. So financially and just from personnel-wise,
it doesn't fit.
I mean, it's not a major need for the Giants. If you wanted to say they wanted to make a splash and acquire a player at a position where there's somewhat of a void, I think so. But corner, they got three legitimate starters on this team.
And
right
Richard
now.
Sherman doesn't want to come here and be a backup.
No, I don't.
He doesn't want to be
that,
a nickel corner.
No. I find that very difficult to believe that Richard Sherman is going to accept a lesser role. He's been a guy that's been on the outside for his entire career in Seattle, and I know there's some speculation that Seattle may be shopping him. There's also speculation today, I don't know if you saw the story, Marshawn Lynch is thinking about coming back and maybe joining the Raiders, that if he were to come back, they would maybe do a package deal with Lynch and Sherman and send them to Oakland or wherever it may be. So there's a lot of rumors at this time of the year, which is understandable as you near the draft. But
and the thing about this, you don't see a lot of trades within the draft, you know, usually.
Yeah, that's rare too.
You know, and so, but it,
especially involving players.
That's what I mean.
You don't see.
No, the picks,
correct,
but not the
picks,
player.
But like, you don't see a
hey, Lance,
veteran.
I'm going to give you Richard Sherman. You give me the 23rd pick and,
exactly.
You know, and then a bag of money somewhere we'll find.
we'll throw it under the table and you can find it somewhere. Yeah, I mean, that to me is something that just I don't think the Giants would need to do because, you know, right now, as we've mentioned, cornerback is a position of strength.
No question.
You look at the depth chart. But you could certainly argue that this could be a draft where they look to bolster the back end of the depth chart.
Oh, I absolutely believe that there will be a cornerback drafted by the Giants this year. I think they need it. I think that just because you always need cornerbacks, it's not easy to listen, you've got your three, and you certainly need some depth there. Because you look at DRC is getting a little bit long in the tooth and just, you know, you want to kind of start to develop some guys so that you have in the pipeline, you got a guy that's coming. We draft him maybe in the fourth round, third round. He gets a little bit of experience playing special teams, some nickel dime stuff. But get him in the situation where when DRC leaves that these guys are now seasoned veterans and come in and compete for a starting job. So I don't think that any team can have enough cornerbacks, especially healthy ones.
Well, considering what we saw with the Giants last year when DRC went down in the playoff game and Aaron Rodgers took advantage of that, I mean, that's more of a reason why
no question
can never have enough depth. Yeah. I mean, there's other examples, Jeff. I don't know if you remember in 2015, the Redskins game, which was pretty much to determine who would get the lead in the division. DRC goes down in the first half. On the very first play, Kirk Cousins connects with DeSean Jackson for a 63-yard touchdown. So there's been ample evidence that when the starter goes down, the Giants clearly can use somebody that, in a pinch, they can put in the corner, at the slot position, whatever you name it.
And it's such an important position in the National Football League nowadays. You got to have. Remember, before it was two, now you got to have three, and you certainly almost have to have a fourth corner that's just as good as your number three. That just, you know, but you just can't play him all the time. You got to have depth. You got to have it. And because of the league, I heard a statistic today on ESPN that was they went back and looked at coming from the shotgun, and 10 years ago, 20% of the plays were run out of shotgun. 10 years ago.
10 years ago.
Today. Then 2012, it went up to 40%, and now it's at 60% in 2016. So, you know, 60% of the plays are coming out of shotgun now. And really, it goes along with that's – you get what the college game gives you.
Yeah.
I mean, the teams are out of shotgun probably way more than 60% in college. And so that's basically how it has transitioned itself into the NFL now, because the players that are coming from college are running that system, and you have to take the players and put them in and at their strengths. They got to play to their strengths, and if it's a quarterback out of shotgun, then you put them in shotgun.
Well, speaking of college prospects and speaking of quarterbacks, we now transition to a school that has a quarterback as well as a few other prospects as we look to continue to preview the upcoming 2017 NFL Draft. And we're going to turn our attention to Pittsburgh. We're now joined by Brian Batko, Pittsburgh beat writer for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, as he helps us take a closer look at the Panthers' prospects for the upcoming draft. Brian, Lance Meadow, Jeff Fiegels here on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Hi, Brian.
Absolutely, I'm doing well. Thank you guys for having me on. And it's always weird to hear people not from here refer to it as Pittsburgh, because here everybody just calls it Pitt. So it's just always a little foreign. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I thought we'd start off a little bit more formal with you, Brian, before we got into the nuts and bolts. So then we'll refer to it for Pitt moving forward. But I certainly appreciate the time. Let's start with the offensive line, and that could be a position where the Giants look to address in the draft. And Pitt has two players in particular. You've got a guard and you've got a tackle. Want to start with Dorian Johnson, the guard, 6'5", 300, full-time starter for 3 years. What is it about his play that you think could translate to the NFL?
Well, I think just the fact that he's played guard at the college level, and maybe he's not one of those guys that would be getting moved inside from a tackle spot. So he's kind of got that going for him. But he's also just really athletic for a very large man, Lance, and I think that's what people see in him. Scouts, it's the physical tools, the natural things. He's athletic. He's pretty quick for a guy his size, and he's got really, really long arms. I mean, you always hear about wingspan when people talk about NBA prospects and basketball guys, but Dorian Johnson's got it for an offensive lineman, and it's one of those things that sort of makes scouts drool. And he was a really consistent player for Pitt, and I think if you ask people just all around, pound for pound, their best NFL prospect, Dorian Johnson might be the first name that some of the gurus shoot out there.
Well, one thing you like about him is that he's healthy. He stays healthy. He's been 35 consecutive starts at that position, and really coming from an offensive line with Pitt last year. On my notes here, they only gave up 5 sacks in the whole season. Is that true? I mean, that's quite a stat. That's amazing to me.
Yeah, their offensive line was tremendous, and you know, it's not just Johnson, but also on that left side with him was Adam Bisnawati, another guy who was at the combine and could be a middle round selection, I would think, in the draft later this month. So, when you had Johnson at left guard and Bisnawati at left tackle, that's a great way to protect your blind side, because those are two guys who, really started a ton of games in their college careers at Pitt. They were two local guys from Western PA. So they made for a really good offensive line, and certainly there were some other guys also on down that line that helped them protect the quarterback, and those guys are returning next season.
With respect to Bisnawati, Brian, how did he fare? I know Jeff just threw out the number that they didn't give up many sacks as a unit, but Bisnawati in particular, how did he fare against what you would consider to be the elite pass rushers in the ACC?
Well, I mean, this is – last year I wasn't on the beat full-time, but I was at the Clemson game, and, you talk about one of the best teams in the country and the team that ended up as the national champion, obviously – Pitt was the only team to beat him, and obviously Bisnawati and the rest of the guys kept Nathan Peterman clean enough to score 43 points in that game and knock off Clemson. So he held his own. I think he's probably looked at by the by the NFL as maybe more of a run blocker and better in that area, but I always thought he was a pretty decent pass blocker too, and I think he moved pretty well in the position drills at the combine in Indianapolis and did well for himself there. So I don't know. Maybe he's a guy that transitions to the guard spot like his teammate Dorian Johnson. But I think Biznovati is he's a tough kid, and he works really hard. I mean, you won't hear a bad thing about him, and he was definitely a well-respected guy at Pitt, and he was one of the leaders of not just the offense but that team as far as when you get into the intangibles.
Of the two, Brian, who do you think has the higher ceiling between Johnson and Biznovati?
I think it's Johnson because the stuff I said, you know, as hard as Biznovati works, he's probably not as naturally gifted as Johnson. He's not quite as quick. He's not going to move as well as Johnson does. He doesn't have the real crazy long arms. Biznovati has huge hands. I think he measured in with one of the largest hands out there at the combine. So, I mean, that's something. But I think Johnson probably has a little more upside. He was a higher-rated recruit coming out of high school, so you always kind of look at that pedigree. I think Johnson will go higher ultimately. I've even seen him sneaking into the back end of the first round in a mock draft or two. But I think both could be pretty good NFL linemen.
So, obviously, these guys were blocking for one James Conner, who, you know, for those that don't know, this young man, you know, had an All-American sophomore year. Unbelievable. 1,700 yards, 26 touchdowns. And then, of course, you know, he was diagnosed with cancer and sat out all of 2015. Comes back, had a nice year last year. From what I've been reading, just, you know, James Conner is going to be a mid-round kind of guy. But I'm sure that, you know, the story on this young man is he's a fighter. He's probably a great teammate. Talk a little bit about James Conner and his upside and where you think that he possibly would be able to go.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think before you even get into any of the on-field stuff and what he's good at and maybe what he needs to improve on, just you can't say enough about his character. I think if people know his story, I'm not sure why there would be an NFL fan out there that doesn't want him drafted by your team because of all the stuff you mentioned. I mean, he was complete workhorse running back as a sophomore and really just broke out in a huge way. And then he actually got injured in the season opener against, I think it was Youngstown State in 2015. It was a knee injury. It wasn't an ACL. I think it was an MCL. And then it was actually after that season that he missed the whole year. That's when they found the cancer. So that was kind of going to be a question mark for him coming into last season. But even after a little bit of a slow start last year, he ended up turning it on and obviously had another really good season. So he's a bigger back. I think the question with James Conner in terms of on the field is, you know, does he have the burst? Does he have the speed and that kind of thing to be an every down back? Maybe not, but he's someone that I think can help a team. And like you said, the character stuff is not a concern in the least bit. I mean, a lot of the top running backs out there, it seems like, get questioned about some of off-the-field issues and things like that. That's not a problem with James Conner at all. If anything, he goes above and beyond, and I think teams will really like that about him.
Talking with Brian Batko, Pitt beat writer for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Brian, you mentioned there may be some questions about can he be an every-down back. Two things to follow up on that. How are his receiving skills if somebody wanted to maybe utilize him as a change-of-pace type of back? And pass protection-wise, what have you seen out of him?
He didn't do a whole lot of catching the football early on in his career at Pitt. He was really just kind of a between-the-tackles guy. I mean, it's funny, coming into college, I think if you looked at a lot of his recruiting profiles and stuff like that, he was kind of looked at as a defensive end prospect. But Pitt was short at running back that first spring or fall or whatever when he was on campus, so they moved, you know, they stuck him there. And he proved to be a really good runner. Didn't catch the ball too much, but he did some more of that last season as a senior, and I was at his pro day at Pitt. I think 30 NFL teams were there, so certainly a lot of them got a good look at James Conner. And I thought he caught the ball really well. He told us media afterward he didn't drop a pass in those drills at his pro day. So I don't think his hands are too big of a question mark. I mean, he's no you know, Brian Westbrook coming out of the backfield or anything like that. But I think he can catch the ball fairly well. He can help you in the pass game a little bit. I think he's a fine blocker because he's a really – strong, muscular guy, so I don't think that's too much of an issue with him. He's about, he fluctuates between 230 and 240, so I think he's a pretty well-rounded back. It's just, you know, maybe the speed and things like that are something that could hold him back a little bit, but middle rounds, I think, is probably where James Conner is going to end up.
Could be a nice special teams player, you know, come in, fill in if someone gets hurt at the running back position, and, you know, actually, and the character, you're always looking for guys like that. Hard workers, those are the guys that can fill in the back end of your roster that the general managers talk about all the time about, you know, making a good football team. So
right, and he even played some snaps at defensive end, I think, in a game or two last year. And it was funny, someone asked him after the pro day, did you do any drills for the scouts at the end? And he just joked, and he's like, no, I guess I should have, but no, I'm a running back.
Well, we talked. We just had one of the reporters or the play-by-play guy for South Alabama, who they have a tight end down there. The Pitt has a tight end, Scott. Was it Orndorff?
Orndorff.
Yeah, I have a tendency to butcher names, by the way. but you know, this I just doing a little research on him. He's a big guy, 6'5", 255. Not particularly used in the passing game because of that Pitt running game that they have up there. Talk a little bit about this young man.
Yeah, he was not a huge pass catcher, like you said, and really Pitt hasn't had tight ends like that in recent years. And, you know, they use them more as inline blockers, and they'll leak out here and there and catch some passes or show up in the red zone. But I think that's the thing about Scott Orndorff, and that's kind of what he told me before he left for the combine, was that I want to show NFL teams that I can be used running routes and in that capacity, maybe more than I was needed at that role in college. So, he's not a burner at tight end. I mean, he's not crazy fast or anything like that, but he's tall. He's probably 6'5", 6'6". He can run well enough. I think he's got pretty good hands. He did drop a pass in the end zone in the bowl game that Pitt ended up losing. And I think that was, tough for him to take. But generally, he was a good red zone target. Like I said, he's a tall guy. So Scott Orndorff might be one of those guys that a team takes a flyer on in the sixth or seventh round and maybe ends up making a team and can do something as a tight end.
Well, and the guy that was throwing passes to him was Nathan Peterman, the quarterback, and the Giants could be in a position where maybe they want to look at a younger option to eventually take over for Eli Manning, and his completion percentage has been very high during the course of his career. I know he started off at Tennessee and due to injuries and not getting many opportunities wound up at Pitt. But, you know, what do you look at in terms of the upside, Brian, of Nathan Peterman, and where do you think he'll end up being drafted?
Well, in terms of upside, he just kept getting better at Pitt. So, I mean, that's something that you can't overlook. I mean, he won the job at quarterback his junior season after transferring from Tennessee because he was eligible right away because he was a graduate. He's a really sharp kid. So he won the job his junior year and then, of course, had it his whole senior year. And like you said, doesn't make too many mistakes, doesn't throw very many interceptions. And that's a big reason why Pitt was able to beat some teams like Penn State and Clemson this past season. And I think he's a pretty accurate quarterback. Maybe he doesn't have the biggest arm that you'll ever see, but he's cerebral. He's really smart. And I did read that, I guess, the Giants and maybe the Bills and some other teams are interested in talking to him as maybe a long-term backup plan for their respective starters. And I think that makes sense. I don't know that he's a guy that comes in right away and is a starting quarterback in the NFL, 6 months from now or whatever. But I think he's someone that you'd like to have on your team because he's smart. He's got good leadership qualities, which is so important at that position. And, he got kind of a raw deal at Tennessee, but it turns out Justin Dobbs was not a bad quarterback who was blocking him down there. So Nathan Peterman, he might still have his best football ahead of him, as they always say.
And I think the Dobbs guy is pretty smart, too.
Yeah.
Right.
But, I think the one thing about Peterman and I said this on our show last week, we were talking about quarterbacks in the draft. This is the most intriguing draft, in my opinion, for a long time with quarterbacks because I think that every other week, guys are shooting up the draft, down the draft, and then all of a sudden, Nathan Peterman, his name has started to surface a little bit more. So whether it's guys are kind of have just kept it under the vest a little bit, and now his name is getting out there because of some of the things that we just spoke about. But I certainly can see this guy landing in one of these teams that what we mentioned. About just a guy that's a smart leadership skills, good acumen as far as from the quarterback position is going to go out there and understand what's going to be put in front of him, and then a team could have confidence in him coming in relief, but really learning a system. The Giants are kind of in a position now where they know they have a little timeline with Eli Manning and really going out and trying to find somebody to learn the system under Eli Manning. This would be a perfect fit, in my opinion. If they, I mean, if the Giants had drafted someone like Nathan Peterman, it wouldn't surprise me, because I think that he's close by. He went to Pitt, can play in cold weather, which we get up here in New England. I almost said New England. In New York.
The extended New England.
Yeah, the extended New England. So, I think that he'll get a shot somewhere in the National Football League, and good for him.
Yeah, sure thing. And that's he learned multiple offenses in his time at Pitt. He had a different offensive coordinator from his junior year to his senior year. And they did a lot of interesting things in that offense last year. Peterman was throwing a lot of shovel passes. He had good players around him, don't get me wrong, and he had that really good offensive line that we've talked about at the top. But he seems to be a guy that can pretty much assimilate to whatever a coach needs from him. And I think that's something that the teams are going to be impressed by with him.
Tough kid, too. I remember watching a couple games last year and him taking some licks. I mean, he's a pretty tough kid, too.
Yeah, he tries to pick his spots to run. I mean, he's not, Lamar Jackson or anything like that, but he's not a bad athlete for a quarterback. And every once in a while, he'd escape the pocket, get out of there, pick up some yards in a first down. And, yeah, like you said, he would take some hits. And he got hit in the bowl game, didn't get to finish that game against Northwestern at Yankee Stadium, of course, up in your guys' way. So, and Pitt's offense really wasn't able to function without him. So I think maybe that tells you something else about how important Nate Peterman was to that team.
I think it also is attracted the fact that he ran a pro-style type of offense, so that would help him make the transition. And as you mentioned, Brian, I think you brought up a really good point that if he does wind up with a team like the Giants or the Steelers, there's not that urgency factor for him to step in day one as a starter because they have Ben Roethlisberger and Eli Manning, respectively, and they can obviously mentor him, similar to the Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers model that we saw in Green Bay. As we're talking to Brian Bacco, Pitt beat writer for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Well, on the defensive side of the ball, one particular prospect that has jumped off the page, both literally and figuratively, Brian, is Juan Price. Small guy, not necessarily a huge defensive end in terms of the size that we see for normal prospects, but I was reading an anonymous scout told NFL.com they described him as a little ball of dynamite, and if there's anybody that can maybe back up that claim, it's you from seeing him up close and personal. I've also seen comparisons to James Harrison of the Pittsburgh Steelers, not necessarily maybe because of his play, but because of his stature and so forth. I mean, is it the energy that makes him attractive, or is there something else about his game?
I think that's a big part of it, and, that James Harrison comparison maybe gets thrown out a little easily because of where we are, and, Pitt shares a facility with the Steelers, so
understandable.
They're all down there in the same place. But, hey, maybe that's a best-case scenario for what Juan Price can become in the NFL because, like you said, he's a small guy, so he's always kind of winning that battle in terms of leverage and being low to the ground when he's coming off the end. Maybe a little bit of a tweener. Some teams probably think he's not big enough to be a defensive end in the NFL. But his production sort of speaks for itself. I mean, he was just always in the backfield against these ACC offensive lines. He was living in there. He was getting after quarterbacks. If it wasn't a sack, he was hurrying them. He had the most sacks of any player in the ACC the past two seasons. So, and he's someone that, you think about him as sort of this long shot underdog guy because of his size, but he was originally an Ohio State commit out of high school and flipped to Pitt, and he really had a ton of injuries early in his college career. It was torn pectorals and upper body, stuff like that. But once he finally got healthy and sort of found what his fit was in a defense, I mean, he was just he was a monster in sort of a small package.
Well, with his size, you could certainly see him playing some linebacker. Maybe in the National Football League. And again, these guys that make the back end of the rosters, like the Juan Prices, these guys can earn their way onto the field. And really, just to have a chance to – I have a star next to his name because I have a feeling that some team's going to take a flyer on this guy. And I think they like his upside. They like his little ball of dynamite attitude. I think it's going to go a long ways. Real quickly, as we kind of wrap up on the Pitt personnel going to the draft, this Tyreek Jarrett, another kind of a this is a guy that the Giants could look for right here, especially if they don't get Hankins back. 6'3", 355 pounds. Now that's some size right there.
That's a meat and potatoes.
Yeah, he's a monster.
But in a perfect 4-3 defense, run stopper. This guy, somebody that you know, you got to take a little look at. They don't have him really in some of the things I'm reading about him. They don't have him really, really high. But maybe just talk a little bit about Mr. Jarrett here and his upside.
Yeah, he didn't get a combine invite, so I mean that's, I guess, sort of the first bar that you look at in terms of draft potential. But you know, he was at the pro day too, and like I said, it was one of Pitt's biggest pro days that they've had in recent years because of all these guys who have a chance to make an NFL roster. And you know, he went up to do the vertical jump like they do, and I was worried that the ground was going to shake or something when he came down, because he is just massive. I mean, there were some plays that he was just busting through the line last year, and even if it wasn't, you know, getting after the quarterback or bringing him down for a sack, I mean, he just took up so much space and was so crucial for what Pitt wants to do on defense. I mean, they just want to get in the gaps and build a wall against the run, and stopping the run was not Pitt's problem last season, and Tyreek Jarrett was a big part of that. So, I mean, certainly his size alone, you think, would maybe get him on some draft boards from some NFL teams, and it's almost like what Juan Price can do. I mean, it's the NFL, it's sort of a specialist league now. There's always, you know, roles for guys, even if it's just in this formation or another. So maybe Tyreek Jarrett is a guy who could get a look, and if not, you know, maybe in the late rounds, make a roster and see what he can do out of there, simply by virtue of being, you know, 6'3", 350, and just a mountain of a man.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of these teams like to shuffle in those defensive linemen, you know, just because they get tired being that big. You know, that's a lot of calories and moving muscles around for three down players. But this guy could certainly fit some of those teams, the rotational stuff. So, yeah, it's interesting. You know, you look at Pitt, and you're right. It seems to me that this was a team that you know, has a lot of seniors and a lot of big pro day. And you know, we look forward to seeing some of these guys. And on our show, we've been going and doing this stuff for the last two or three weeks, going over players and different programs and stuff. So it's going to be really interesting on draft day that some of these guys are going to get drafted, and we can tell everybody, hey, we were talking about that guy. And it's certainly a pleasure to have you on the show.
Absolutely, yeah. Thanks for having me on, guys. I'll be monitoring it as well, for sure. It seems like the Pitt guys could go in all sorts of ranges. So I guess I'll start by watching the draft Thursday night, and I won't really get a break until late Saturday. So.
Absolutely. Well, Brian, once again, appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Brian.
Sure thing. Yeah. Anytime, right, guys. Have a good one.
You got too. It. Brian Batko, Pitt beat writer for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, with some nice insight across the board on these Panthers prospects.
So look, so now we know that when we start to talk about Pittsburgh, we have to say Pitt.
Pitt, correct, okay. Yes. Well, like I said, we wanted to start off a little bit more formal.
You know what it's probably like? It's probably like, you know, people here, we don't say New Jersey, we say Jersey.
Jersey, correct.
Right?
Yeah. So one of those
when
things.
Somebody from out of state says, oh, New Jersey, we're like, oh, you're definitely from not around here, because you say New Jersey.
Absolutely.
We say Jersey here.
Jersey, you know.
You're Jersey. Yeah. He's a Jersey kid.
You're part of the jargon once you know, live here.
Absolutely.
And you're adapted to the area. So it's understandable that that's the Pitt thing, and we have our thing here in Jersey and the NY, as I like to say as well. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Twitter as well, hashtag Giants Chat. For the remainder of the program, we're going to try to get to as many phone calls and tweets as we can. I know we appreciate the patience for those of you who have been holding on for us to get through the two interviews, but we got Ken in New Jersey on the line. Ken, what's happening?
Hey, Ken, how are you?
Good. How you guys doing?
Doing
good.
Ken.
Good. What's going on?
Good. I actually had a three technique defensive tackle question, but you guys pretty much answered it with the last interview.
That's what we do. That's what we do here. That's it.
Yeah. All right. I'll ask one other question, and then I'll give you a comment. Is Trevin Wade still on the team? Because I really just don't want to see him in a Giants uniform next year.
Trevin Wade is a free agent.
Yeah.
Thank the Lord. Hopefully he doesn't get re-signed. No offense, but I'm just tired of watching him get beat. I heard a Bucky Brooks interview with David Njoku, and I'm not sure if you guys heard this, but he comes from a huge family. He's got like eight siblings, and they're all college graduate doctors, physicists, they're, you know, surgeons. The kid is extremely intelligent. And
well, he went to Miami. No wonder he's intelligent.
You had to bring up, of all players, you brought up the Miami kid to a Miami grad.
Sorry to interrupt you.
You knew what answer you were going to get,
I mean,
Ken.
Listen,
it's
Miami
stating the obvious.
They have smart kids there. That's just the way that we roll down there in Miami.
Really? Wow. It's a stunning comment out of Jeff Eagles with that one. Didn't see that coming. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, Jeff Beagles, you're the only Eagle I ever liked, so.
Thank you.
At least you got that going for you.
I appreciate that.
Gets a check mark next to that category.
Yeah. No, but you know what? You're right. He's the smart kid. And listen, that never hurts anybody being a smart dude. You know what I'm saying? Because nowadays they don't have the playbooks anymore because everything is on, you know, digital thing. But I'm telling you what, if you're just a normal person was to come in here the day as training camp starts and see the size of these playbooks and how these guys have to know this stuff, if you are a smart dude, that helps. It helps a lot. It definitely does.
Classroom's a big part of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have confidence in him. I really hope if we have to trade up to like 18 or something like that to get him, I hope we do it. We only have so much time left with Eli, and I think he can get a third ring if we get a guy like Njoku.
Well, that's, you know, a lot. Okay, thanks for the call. A lot of people have him being around that 23 number too. You know what I'm saying? But it's not a perfect science. We know that. But some of the mock drafts I have seen have had Njoku going down a little bit lower than, you know, obviously Howard's going to be the first guy off. Okay. But I think it's a matter of need again, you know? So if there's some teams in there they're going to go after their defensive ends and their cornerbacks and safeties and this and that, you know, the Njoku, who should be a top 10 pick, all of a sudden starts coming down. He may still be there at 23 for the Giants. You just don't know. And I will tell you, if he's there, I would be really surprised if they don't take him. I really do.
Well, and he's got New Jersey ties as well.
Absolutely. Where is Cedar Grove.
So that's another attractive piece.
And by the way, his brother is going to the U as a wide receiver next year.
Wow, look at this. So the Njoku family and the Feagles family.
Extended play over there, down in Coral Gables.
Yes, the next generation of players.
Yeah.
It's a little interesting nugget, tidbit.
And the last I checked, in 2018 recruiting class, just saying, Miami's number one right now. Well, not that we're going to go into that, but one day we will.
Yes, oh, I guarantee you we will. And we'll probably hear about it throughout the course of the 2017 season in some capacity as well. I'm just going out on a limb there in terms of that. But in all seriousness, I would agree with you. I've seen him go at 18 in mock drafts and then within that early 20 barometer.
Right.
So that's a fair assessment.
And the caller had mentioned, you know, maybe the Giants move up to get him. Who knows? You know?
Very possible.
I mean, they don't do it a lot. I mean, they did it 2 years ago with Collins moving up to get to the second round.
Yeah. Well, they've never done it in the first round. This is interesting. They've never done it in the first round since Jerry Reese has been the general manager.
Okay.
Just to at least have that. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not going to happen, but they've never done it with Jerry Reese as the general manager.
And, again, I think it's a matter of who they really have on their board that they take stock in and say, listen, we got it. We really want this guy. And I feel like offensively, you know, the consensus is that you need offensive linemen, but I'm telling you right now, you got your five offensive linemen that are on the roster now that are going to start the opening game. That's my opinion. They're all here. And so, you know, what are you looking for? To me, it's the tight end position is what's missing. You know, we got a little bit of questions at the running back, you know, Perkins being so young, but he's going to be the guy. And, you know, is there going to be another running back in the draft taken? I don't know. But to me, if you can get a guy in the first round like a Njoku who has a tremendous upside, as the caller mentioned, he's smart. He's a bright kid. Listen, I'm going for it. I mean, even if I have to trade up for him, I may go after him.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Keith in Newark. Keith, what's happening?
He's saying Keith, but it's Q.
Q, okay.
Me.
All right, Q.
You got it, on Q. All right, so what's happening?
I wanted to talk about, of course, I wanted to talk about the offensive line. I wanted to talk about Flowers, and I wanted to talk about, I remember when we first drafted Justin Pugh, and we kind of knew his limitations as far as, I wouldn't say limitations, but, you know, like as far as the short arms, and we wasn't too sure if he was going to be a good tackle, but we put him at tackle anyway, knowing that, you know, he was young and he was learning, and he struggled. So we moved him inside. So my point is that
we know your point. we know your point. We know where you're going.
I know. Now hold on. Let me finish. I know Flowers is kind of tall for a guard, but then again, I don't really think he's that tall. I think that if we did that for Q, and I don't understand what's the big thing with Flowers and why we can't move him inside and start on start hitters. You know, I don't understand why we're so, like, fixated with him being at being a left tackle. Now, I'm not saying that that's the way it is. I know we still have things that have to, you know, we have to get through as far as the OTAs, and nothing is set in stone yet. But I'm just, but the things that I've been hearing in articles and the verbiage that's been coming from the front office and everything, like Reese, I think I heard Reese and Mara and Tish, you know, they was, I'm not sure if they all quoted them, but I'm, well, a couple, anyway.
They all believe in him. That's what they said.
They're kind of comfortable. And from going by what they're saying, it's like, it sounds like they're comfortable with leaving him at left tackle. Now, I hope that's not the case. I hope we bring in some competition for this guy, because I'm not saying that he's going to be bad. And I understand the process of developing an NFL player. I understand this is his third year, and this is the year in which he's supposed to show the fruit for, you know, to show the fruit, the labor for, you know, as far as us being the number one pick on him.
Well, I can tell you this.
I understand that.
Yeah, I can tell you this. We're going to know sooner or later, within the next couple weeks, that if there's going to be competition at that left tackle. Okay, because if the Giants,
I just don't want us to forget the offensive line, because that and the offensive line, we have to have that. Like, if we have to have the trenches secure. That for me as a football player, as long as a football fan watching the sport, I understand that once you have the trenches secured, then you have a better shot. You know, winning a game and developing a better team.
Yeah, now, Jim, everything feeds off of the trenches. I mean, you could say that about any team. I mean, I think your point is well taken, but, you know, they have brought in a free agent in DJ Fluker, and we'll see whether or not they bring in some other bodies through the draft. I mean, that'll be an indication of whether or not perhaps somebody will come in to compete with Ereck Flowers, because, you know, even with some of the free agents that they brought in, I mean, Fluker, his majority of his experience has been on the right side with the Chargers at right tackle and right guard. So, I mean, listen, anything can happen in the spring, but on paper right now, I don't know if necessarily their plan is to get him some reps on the left side, so I don't know how much competition he's going to bring for Ereck Flowers. Majority of the competition that I think you see on paper right now is the right side between Jerry Hart and Fluker. The left side, you know, you got Pugh, you have Richburg, and Brett Jones can compete at the guard spots and the center spots. It's the left tackle position. Do you go in the draft? Do you bring in a late free agent? I think that remains to be seen.
Yeah. I
also wanted to say one thing. One more thing.
Yep.
About, I think that DRC, you know, last year in the playoffs when DRC went out the game, I think both games when we played Green Bay last year.
Correct.
The regular season game, the same thing got hurt in that Green Bay earlier game, and we was controlling the tempo, and after that, we just feel like a completely different team. So my point, you know, I say that to say that, you know, we got to make sure we bring in another good corner, because I think if DRC stays in that game in Green Bay, it might be a different result. I pretty much think it was, because we were controlling that game. And another thing about Flowers, you know, I noticed, you know, I watch the Instagrams. I'm a giant nut. I watch everything. But I seen him, you know, doing, he's training and everything. He's posting. I bet, even though if you can't tell nothing from the social media, we already talked about that. As long as I'm saying it, I'm happy. And it looks like he's focused, and that's all that matters. And I love the show, of course.
Thank you, Giants
fans. And I listen to everything offline. Thank you.
All right, Q, appreciate the phone call.
Listen,
thanks so much for weighing in.
You got to be happy. I mean, we could be sitting here saying, where's Flowers? What's he doing? Well, he's in here. He's in the building. He's working out, okay? I believe that from what you're hearing from the brass is they're saying, we believe in Ereck Flowers. He's going to show us, and we hope that he proves us correct, that we do believe, and he's got to play better. We know that, okay? I do, in my opinion, would like to see some really true competition at that position. I don't want anybody in the National Football League to rest on their laurels and anybody's just given a position and say, hey, you need to play better, okay? So what if he doesn't play better? You got to have depth behind that position in case he doesn't. So that's why I'm saying we're going to know sooner or later in the next couple weeks if the Giants are going to draft an offensive tackle. It's going to be a left offensive tackle, most likely, okay? Or – They're going to go in. They're going to try to find a free agent somewhere. I mean, listen, how good is that free agent going to be, Lance? He would have already been signed somewhere.
Of course,
somewhere.
There's a reason why the player is still out there. So, unless it's somebody that wasn't fully healthy and they were waiting to check whether or not he's 100%.
There may be a June 1 cut out there somewhere.
Correct. That's a possibility.
That they're just kind of – maybe that's it's kind of hidden and we haven't talked about it and they know about it. So you know, that could be something that happens. Bottom line is there is going to be some competition at that left tackle because they're not going to go into the preseason with just having giving you the job again. You know, you got to play better, okay? Play a little bit better, but we're going to give you the job, okay? That's not how the NFL works. And so we're going to find out sooner or later. And I will tell you this. That offensive line has something to prove. There's going to be some competition at every position. I mean, we obviously know who the starters are going to be, but that's all. Fluker has something to prove. I love the pickup with him, and I love what he said. He came into this building and said, I'm here to prove it. I got a one-year, two-year deal, whatever it is. I'm going to prove that I'm a player of this caliber, and you're going to pay me once I do it. And then, obviously, you have Bobby Hart and the other guys and John Jerry. I mean, these guys, there's going to be some good competition there. They have another year under their belt with Mike Solari, the offensive line coach. That's going to help. And I just feel like I think the Giants' offensive line will be in a better position than they were last year. They have to be in order to get this offense scoring points and running the football.
Yeah, with Bobby Hart, remember, he took over for Marshall Newhouse last season because Newhouse got hurt early in the year. So Hart also is now coming into maybe his first season where he could be penciled in as the starter, and there's motivation there to make sure that he can hold on and to solidify that spot. Because to me, I could see Fluker, Jeff, providing competition at both spots. And I think he's going to get reps at both right guard and right tackle. I think we're going to see different alignments in the spring where they're going to try to push both of those guys.
And let's just say you got Bobby Hart and Fluker. Well, one of those guys is going to have to come out as a swing player. The guy can play right tackle. He can play right guard. You know, whether it's Bobby Hart's the starter and Fluker's not. But one of those guys is going to play. They're going to play. You know, the offensive line doesn't stay intact all season. They never do, other than I think one team last year was the Falcons. Their offensive line played together the whole season. Prior to that, they never did.
No, they were decimated by injuries. And,
unbelievable.
And how much of a coincidence, by the way, when the line stays healthy, you go to the Super Bowl.
Hello, yeah. And you got a running back and a running game. And, you know, so, but, yeah. Listen, when we go into training camp this year, and you don't tell a lot in OTAs, I can just tell you that. It's just, but training camp, that will be the main focus. That'll be everybody's going to be narrowed in on that offensive line competition because, really, defensively, we kind of know what we're getting coming back. See what happens with Hankins sooner or later if he signs or not. But the fact of the matter is that whole defense is coming back, and the offense is pretty much where it's at. You got Perkins who's going to be playing running back. You got Marshall coming in here who's going to be amazing, and then you're going to see some of the draft picks that come in. So it's exciting. It's actually really. Did I just get you excited?
You got me amped up.
All right.
I'm ready to put
the pants
on.
I hope I got everybody else excited about it too. So we got to run.
Yes. Well, we want to thank J.D. Byers and Brian Batko for coming on the program to preview South Alabama and Pittsburgh, respectively. The archive will be up in a little bit. No program tomorrow. It is Good Friday, so we are taking an extended weekend break, but we'll be back up and running Monday as we are closing in on almost a week away from the NFL draft. We'll continue to preview some more schools, get you set with all the prospects so you have everything you need to know as we get set for the latter part of April with the draft. For Jeff Eagles, I'm Lance Meadow, saying so long here on Giants.com. Enjoy.